Fancy a game?
Looks like Tarzan plays like Jane.
You know, I could probably shoot him from here. I'd be doing us both a favor.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, turnovers. That was an ugly game last night. Mike Grimala will join us a little bit later. Talk more UNLV. We've got some Golden Knights to get to. They're in Vancouver tonight looking for a fifth straight win. And Jake Bischoff scored a goal.
Do you want me to play that now? I thought we had a plan.
We do have a plan. I'm just teasing it.
Ooh.
By the way, so in the name of cross promotion, the board behind me says press box, 9 a.m. Friday, Rick Pitino.
Whoa.
Do they have Rick Pitino coming
on the
show?
Oh, my God.
Because that's terrific.
That's amazing. Are they going to ask him? No, wait. No. No.
No?
I'm going to wait. Right. And I'm going to listen.
All right.
Find out.
So that might be happening tomorrow at 9 a.m. I hope so. Anyways, UNLV lost to Valpo 72-64 last night. And it was brutal? Is that the right word to use?
Well, thankfully, I didn't get to watch it because somebody tweeted out that if you have AT&T Sportsnet, it should be on this one channel. And according to my DirecTV package, I have three channels that are AT&T Sportsnet. None of them will play.
Really? None of them worked for you?
Correct.
Huh. Interesting.
So I wound up watching the Clippers.
25 turnovers for UNLV.
I saw Twitter.
So the thing with UNLV's offense, this is the second time this season we've seen this, where they are dreadful on the offensive end, and it's primarily due to the massive amount of turnovers. And they've lost both of those games. Both their losses are games where they just turn the ball over 20-plus times. The good news is that that's the floor. Like, we've seen the worst of UNLV. Like, I don't think it gets worse than that. Like, they did the same thing against Loyola Marymount. The question, though, is how often do they hit that floor? Because they've played six games, and they've hit it twice now. So, like, if they hit this floor, like, every three games, this is going to be a really rough year. Because they're not winning games if they play like that. Like, San Jose State's really bad. Maybe they could beat San Jose State if they play like that. But they're not winning games if they play like that. And if you do that every third game, you're going to have a really bad season.
Well, would it be every third game, or would it be you do it one game, you win three games, you do it one game, you do it, you know? No?
Yeah, I mean, they've done it twice in six games. That works out to once every three games.
Except that the frequency of it was not do it once, win.
I think you're confused on how, like, averages work out here.
No, you're going off average. I'm saying
33% of their games have looked like
yes,
that.
Yes, I agree, but I'm saying that you're saying that it's going to happen at a 1 in 3 clip, but I'm saying that that means 2 out of 3. Never mind. You know what? Let's move on, because I actually have a question.
Is it a good question, or should I move on myself?
Well, you'll do what you normally do, where I ask the question, and then if it's not on the rundown, you'll just move on to the next section of the rundown. How is the offensive rebounding?
Irrelevant, because they had so many turnovers.
Okay.
Like, it was fine, but they didn't get up enough shots for it to have that big of an impact. And when they did have offensive rebounding, they were terrible finishing in the paint this game. They were 15 of 29 on layups in this game. They only had 6 second chance points.
Jesus Christ.
So they had 16 offensive rebounds, turn that into 6 second chance points. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's not good.
Like, you should be scoring, like, however many offensive rebounds you have, you should have more second chance points than that.
Yeah, because points are worth two.
Yeah, so 16 offensive rebounds to 6 second chance points means they only turned three of those offensive rebounds into a basket or free throws, one of the two. So that's terrible. Like, so they were still getting them, but they did not convert when they got them.
My other question, because I saw you mention this on Twitter, and this may be something that you're going to mention further down in the rundown.
We don't have a rundown. I have a rundown.
Yeah, you have a rundown that I don't get to see, and I'll sometimes ruin because I'll ask questions that are that you are going to culminate in a point later on. Luckily, we do these sort of meetings on the air. There were comments made on the Twitters about dribbling around the perimeter. So is there something to do with, like, with what happened with Loyola Marymount, is there something to do with their zone offense that they can't?
Well, it wasn't so much the zone offense in this game. It's just, it goes back to the point I keep making with Amari Hardy. He's the only guy on this team that can penetrate a defense.
But once he gets to...
Oh, he was brutal last night.
Yeah. He,
like, that. Okay. That's the problem. Like, the reason I like Amari Hardy as the point guard of this team is because he's the guy that I know can consistently get into the paint. Noah Robotham can't do it. Bryce Hamilton, we haven't really seen him do it in the half court that much. Clyburn is hit or miss. But I know Amari Hardy can get into the lane, whether it's off a ball screen or sometimes without one. The problem is, and you saw it last night, Amari Hardy had 5 turnovers, and he didn't finish around the rim. And that's the risk you run if you're going to have, if you're going to rely on Amari Hardy to be your offensive guy in the half court, is he's going to have games like this where it's like, good God, get the ball out of that guy's hands. But he's the guy that can get in the lane. Robotham doesn't do it. Nobody else does that. So when it comes to like, oh, they can't break down a defense, or they're turning it over on the perimeter, just throwing it away, it's partially because nobody else on this team can get in the lane. And that, so like, you have this game where UNLV has 25 turnovers, and Hardy has a bunch of them. Shakur Justin has 5 in this game. And what Valpo did was they clamped down on the lane. Like, they tried to take away Justin and Jiang inside. They were double-teaming Jiang as soon as he got a post touch. Anytime the ball was in the paint with one of those guys, help defenders were coming. And it led to a bunch of turnovers because UNLV tried to bounce pass big-to-big through the double teams, and it didn't work very well. So what you had is Valpo was clamping down on the post play, and Amari Hardy wasn't any good. So offensively, what's next in line?
Wouldn't, and this could be, again, I didn't get to watch the game. Thank you, DirecTV. If you're getting doubled in the paint or in the post, wouldn't that leave someone on the perimeter?
Yeah, but
open?
We've talked about this. The starting lineup has no 3-point shooters in it.
And what I'm saying, though, is like you said, what's next? Okay, the bounce pass while double teamed isn't working. Outlet?
Yeah, but to what? Joel Tomboy? He's not a 3-point shooter.
I was just thinking, eventually those long twos have to...
No, that's not any good. That doesn't work.
I know.
But that's the thing. Like, what's next in line for UNLV? It's if a defense takes away the post-up play and Amari Hardy's not any good, what is next in line? Noah Robotham hasn't shown that he's going to be an effective creator on offense, and he hasn't shown he's going to be an effective shooter. I don't think he's the answer. Maybe it's Bryce Hamilton, but again, we haven't really seen him in the half court do a lot. He's shot on catch and shoot scenarios pretty well, and he's done well in transition, but he hasn't really, hey, in the half court, here's the ball, go do something. We haven't seen that from him. Maybe he can do that, and maybe he's the answer. Sometimes it can be Clyburn, but Clyburn wasn't very good. 4 of 11 tonight. I just don't know. They have some good offensive skill sets on this team, but they don't have enough. And teams are going to be able to take away the post-up play. Like, that'll happen throughout the year where teams just say, all right, we're flooding the paint with defenders. Beat us some other way. And UNLV just doesn't have enough skill sets that they can rely on. And that's sort of a big problem going forward for this team offensively. If Amari Hardy's good, it's not that big of an issue because he can get in the lane and he can get off a shot or he can find a guy that's wide open. But if Amari Hardy's bad and the team's already taken away Jiang and Justin, I don't know where you go after that. The post-up is Minzy's favorite. Hardy's my favorite. And I don't know if there's much after that. So we'll see. But that's going to be a problem that you have to figure out because if you're game planning for UNLV right now, your first priority is, hey, they're going to throw it to Jiang and Justin. All right, let's just throw 75 defenders at them and make them pass out of it. And they haven't really shown they can do that. And even when they do, it's who are they passing out to? I don't know. I do want to talk some UNLV defense because overall, it was a fine defensive performance for UNLV. They gave up less than 1 point per possession. Valpo didn't shoot very well in this game. They shot 37%, and Valpo had 70 turnovers as well. So it wasn't like a great offensive game for Valpo. But there are two big concerns for me watching that, and they're things that we saw hurt UNLV last season. The first part of that was Valpo went right at Mbaki Zhang. And Mbaki Zhang's probably the most important defensive player on this team, and Valpo started this game with their 7-footer attacking Zhang. First few possessions, Zhang had to defend an isolated pick and roll twice. He had to defend 2 post isolations. Like, Valpo's goal was, all right, let's get Zhang in space. Let's make him guard one-on-one. and see how he does. Jong is an excellent help side defender. Like, he's excellent in the lane. He's excellent when somebody else gets beat. He can come over and erase that mistake. He's a good recovery guy. Like, you saw, he had two blocks where they ran a pick and roll, and Jong got beat on the pick and roll, but he recovered to block the shot at the rim. He's good at that. He's not great one-on-one. He's not great when you put him 15 feet away from the basket and make him defend 15 feet away from the basket. And that's what Valpo did. And he wasn't all that good. Smits ended up with 20 points, 8 of 16 shooting. You also had the foul trouble with Mbacki Jong. And his last one was a moving screen. But the other four that he committed in this game were on defense. So you only get 19 minutes out of Mbacki Jong, who might be your most important player. You're going to have a rough night. And so when teams are going to go at Mbacki Jong that way, he has to figure out how to defend without fouling. And if he can't do that, he's going to be less important because he's only going to get to play 19, 20 minutes a game, whatever it ends up being. So that was one thing that we saw this last year where teams would attack Brandon McCoy. They're attacking Mbacki Jong. Jong's better defensively than McCoy, but he's got to be better one-on-one if UNLV's going to be able to defend this way. The other worrisome thing kind of ties into that. Valpo's game plan is what killed UNLV last year, was spread the floor. Put four guys around the perimeter and make sure there's nobody in the paint. So it's four guys around the perimeter, and it's either let's come set a ball screen with Mbacki Jong's man, or let's just throw it one-on-one and make him guard in the paint. And UNLV, their goal this year is not give up threes, so they're not helping off the perimeter. They're leaving guys one-on-one in the paint, and it didn't work that well last night. Valpo struggled inside, so it was fine. But the strange thing is Valpo's not a good three-point shooting team. Like, their guard that's taken the most threes this year is shooting like 27% from three. So what I would have liked to see is UNLV say, all right, make your threes. Like, beat us with your three. We're going to clog the lane because that's what you're trying to do. When you play Mountain West teams, they're going to have four legitimate shooters out there, and it's going to really burn you. But I just thought they were off. Like, UNLV doesn't want to give up threes, but I thought they should have said, all right, shoot threes, Valpo. You're not any good at this. Like, they're outside the top 200 in both three-point attempts and three-point percentages this year. Like, they're not a good three-point shooting team, but UNLV still respected them like they were. It's sort of a season-long defensive scheme, but I would have liked to see them crash the paint and help out Jong so that maybe he doesn't pick up the four fouls and he's not all by himself. But those are things that we saw last year. They were a problem for this team defensively. Valpo tried them out. And again, not a great offensive game for Valpo, but when you play better competition, they might have an easier time spreading UNLV out and making those plays. So we'll talk more with Mike Kramala on UNLV basketball. Also, I didn't know this had to be done, but UNLV just sent out a statement. A statement from Desiree Reed-Francois. After evaluating the UNLV football program with acting president Marta Mina, Coach Tony Sanchez will return for a fifth year to lead the Rebels. We are looking forward to a successful 2019 football season, including bowl eligibility.
We got a 9-10-8.
Continued improvement in the classroom, and as always, a positive student-athlete experience. We have invested more resources than ever into the Rebel football program and will continue exploring every avenue available to be competitive. So she, right there, looking forward to a successful football season, including bowl eligibility. That's it. That's all that matters next year. She put it in the statement as to why he's coming, or him coming back. That's it.
This is black or white.
Yeah, like, and it's not just like from us speculating. That's the athletic director saying we look forward to 2019, including bowl eligibility.
He has a binary directive. You either A, go to a bowl game, or B, get a severance package.
Definitely correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try to be connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
So. I love you. I love this guy.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Noah Robotham has made 8 of 35 three-pointers this season.
He was 1 of 6 last night. He has been bad shooting the ball all season. He is at 22.9% from 3 for the year. At Akron, in his 3-year career, 38.5% was his mark. He never shot below 36% in a season. I tend to believe he's a good shooter. 3 years' worth of data is worth more than 6 games. But at some point for UNLV, he's got to start making threes. Like, that's great if you did it for 3 years at Akron. At some point, you got to do it for UNLV. An interesting thing on Noah Robotham. Marvin Menzies was asked about him earlier in the week before they played last night. And he defended Noah Robotham's shooting. And he did it by saying that they brought Noah in and they showed him video of his shots and were talking about shot selection with him. And he told us that on good shots, Noah Robotham is shooting 38-39%, and that it's his bad shots that are ruining his percentage. The problem with that analysis is that if it's a good shot, he should be making 50% of them. Because you're going to take bad shots. Like, you can't have perfect possessions. You're going to take bad shots, and you're going to shoot 15-20% on your bad shots. You need to make 50% of the good shots so that it balances out, and at the end of the day, you're shooting 35-40%. So, I don't know. It's just bad analysis, I think, on Marvin Menzies' part. Bad rationale to say, oh, well, on the good shots, he's shooting 39%, so everything's good. If he's only shooting 39%, it's probably not a good shot. Like, he needs to be shooting those at 50%. That's what it needs to be at the end of the day. So, I think it's fair to worry about it right now. I don't think he's a bad shooter, but we still haven't seen Noah Robotham be a good shooter for UNLV.
Jonathan Chechua Chamua played 3 minutes against Valparcio.
I don't know what just happened.
What do you mean? JTT played 3 minutes against Valpo.
I think we saw the first real cut to the rotation. He did not play in the first half. He only came in the second half when Mbaki Jong was in foul trouble and when Marvin Menzies was searching for a good lineup. So he got 3 minutes. Shekna Dembele got 11. I think those are the two guys sort of on the fringe of the rotation that are probably going to end up getting cut out here. Dembele's maybe stays in there for being a true center type situation. Trey Woodbury also got 4 minutes. That was, again, when Marvin Menzies was just searching for anything to put out there. So I don't know. Woodbury's kind of on that fringe too, probably behind those two guys even. The curious thing with Marvin Menzies' substitution is all of the turnovers last night and sort of bad play led to him continuing to sub and continuing to sub over and over. And basically what would happen is he'd take a guy out for making a mistake, and the next guy he'd bring in would do something even worse. So he couldn't really find any set of players that were playing well. And he's a very in-game, he's like, logical is the word that comes to mind for me with the substitutions, because he will, like, if a guy makes a couple mistakes in a row, has a couple bad possessions, he takes that guy out. And then if he has a lineup that does well for, you know, 3-4 minutes together, he just sticks with those guys and just leaves them in. It's very logical substitution patterns in a game. Like, he doesn't have a set pattern that he sticks to no matter how guys are playing. He's like, oh, that team's working well, that lineup's working well, let him go. The problem, and this is all in hindsight, I don't really blame him for how he handled it last night, but sort of in hindsight, it feels like he should have left the lineup out there for like 5 minutes and see if they could just play through and stop turning the ball over. Because he kept subbing, and that didn't work. So in hindsight, it feels like, yeah, maybe you should have just said, these are my 5 best guys. You guys go play for 4 minutes, and hopefully you guys can figure this out and stop turning the ball over. Instead, we got a lot of new guy every 30 seconds, and they kept turning the ball over. So I'm curious what Marvin Menzies does, but that's how he normally handles the substitutions, is, all right, 2 bad possessions, get out of here. Somebody else is coming in.
Wyoming will likely not be in a bowl game despite being 6-6.
There are more bowl-eligible teams than there are bowl slots, meaning some 6-6 teams will be left out. The Mountain West only has 5 official bowl tie-ins. They have 7 bowl-eligible teams. six are going to get in, apparently. That's what Craig Thompson, the commissioner, said yesterday. It looks like the Cheez-It Bowl will get the loser of the Mountain West title game. You normally, I think there's a Big 12 team that won't fill that or something like that. I am going to use this scenario to make a hypothetical situation.
Oh, no.
Because we just have Desiree Francois and her statement saying Tony Sanchez will be back next year and that they are looking forward to a 2019 football season that includes bowl eligibility. What happens if UNLV goes 6-6 next year, but they do not go to a bowl game because there are more bowl eligible teams than bowl slots? Is he fired, or is that good enough? I mean, technically, her statement said bowl eligibility, so 6-6 is bowl eligible. She didn't say she's looking forward to a bowl game. She said bowl eligibility. So by those technical words, 6-6 and no bowl game is still good enough, right?
God, the fan base is already mad that she just released that statement.
Are they? I think most people have sort of accepted it.
Okay.
Like, the statement's weird just from the standpoint that I think we all assumed he's coming back.
Oh, I mean, we all assumed it, but there are people that are mad that is the reality of the situation, is there is no option. But I don't see him coming back unless the Fertittas say, okay, we're going to start building the second level, and then it turns into, well, I did say bowl eligibility.
It would be brutal for UNLV to go 6-6 and be one of the teams left out. Like, that would be...
But it would also, like, as a UNLV fan, it also feels sort of like...
Feels right.
Right, yeah. It feels like us. Like, yep, we finally are bowl eligible, but we don't get to go.
The Golden Knights are in fourth place in the Pacific.
We touched on this yesterday with Ryan. Golden Knights are on pace for 85 points, and they're only 2 points back of Anaheim for the last playoff spot in the Pacific. The Pacific division is bad. Like, if you look at records by, like, point percentage, points per game type of thing, they don't have a team in the top 10. And they have, half of the division? Three of the seven in the division. Excuse me. Three of the eight in the division are in the bottom six of the league. Like, this is... Like, the Golden Knights, what were we, 10 days ago, were the second worst team in the NHL. They jumped up. They're like, the 20th best team in the NHL. And they passed, like, four teams in their division. Like, this is a terrible division. And so you have no top 10 teams, like... Half of the division's, like, in the bottom 12. Like, but what the point I'm trying to make here is the Golden Knights can be average and make the playoffs. Like, they don't have to be good to make the playoffs this year because the division is so horrible.
So what is it, the AFC East or the AFC South?
The South, because there's no Patriots.
Okay. Well, no, I'm saying even average Patriots teams are going to be better than the Jets, Miami, and the Bills.
But it's just...
So it's the Colts during the 2000s where they just go to the playoffs because all the other teams were just, like, shooting themselves in the foot.
And the best part is, if you're the Golden Knights, you could potentially end up in the Western Conference Final by being just average, because... The way the playoffs are set up, if the Golden Knights are the 2 or the 3 seed in the Pacific, that means they'll play either the other 2 or 3 seed in the Pacific Division. So your first round game is against another Pacific team. Your second round matchup would be either the number 1 seed from the Pacific or a wild card team who is probably coming from the Central Division. So you could conceivably find yourself in the Western Conference Final without ever beating a good team. And it'd be like, the Golden Knights are going to have, like, 91 points. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to win 2 playoff rounds against other teams that have, like, 94 points in the regular season. And they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. And you're going to be like, no, they weren't one of the 4 best teams, but somehow they're here. So, yeah, they can still do that.
Aim low. You can make it.
Nate Schmidt has yet to score a goal for the Golden Knights.
1 assist. Get it together, Nate. I just want him to score a goal. Like, I just want to talk about Nate Schmidt scoring a goal.
Well, but since he's been back...
Oh, they're really good. Yeah, yeah. No. His numbers are 53-35 are the scoring chances in favor of the Golden Knights, 25-15 are the high danger chances. And as far as like chances allowed, only Brad Hunt among defensemen has a better like per 60 chances and high danger chances allowed. So yeah, oh, he's good. I just want him to score a goal so we can say, oh, he's good. But, you know, surprise, Nate Schmidt's good after his suspension.
He's healthy.
I am very much enjoying the simplicity of Nate Schmidt returns and the Golden Knights season is safe. Like, I very much enjoy that we can just credit it to one guy. Yep, that's all that happened. He came back and everything's fixed.
Marc-Andre Fleury has allowed just 12 goals in his last seven starts.
He is 6-1-0 in those games. His save percentage is 9-4-1. He's been phenomenal recently, and I think it illustrates how important he is. Like, yes, when they score eight goals, they're not going to lose because you don't give up eight goals, or you don't give up nine goals very often. But I think if Fleury is great the rest of this year, the Golden Knights are a playoff team easily. If he's average, they probably miss the playoffs. The division's bad enough that they could still get in. But I think that's sort of what it comes down to. And what's interesting to me is if you look at Fleury's numbers this year, like, the Golden Knights is a team. They've give up the fewest shots per 60 minutes. They give up the third fewest scoring chances per 60 minutes. They give up the fifth fewest high danger chances per 60 minutes. And it's been like that all season. Like, they're terrific at shot suppression. But Fleury's been all over the place. Like, he doesn't have good numbers for the season. And, like, he has five games with a shutout. He has six games where he's given up four goals or more. So, like, he's either the best goalie in the world or, oh, God, we've got to score seven goals tonight to win. What the hell happened? So you've had these extremes, and I don't know. He's the most important player for the team. You need the last seven games of Fleury. If you get that the rest of the season, Golden Knights will probably win the Pacific Division. If you get the first 20 games, we'll see.
Since he is getting used at an alarming clip, at what point do people like take into the account he may be tired if they even make the playoffs?
Yeah, right now you should.
Okay.
That's what we were talking about with Ryan yesterday.
That's I'm trying to bring that back.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
This, like,
they're using
he's been
him
schizophrenic
more than any other goalie. And even if he's great now, there's a good chance they get to the playoffs and rest is a thing for goalies. That's important. And it's been shown the last 10 years that goalies that get rest usually do better in the playoffs. And as of right now, he's not getting very much of it. So if they continue to use him at this rate, yeah, he's probably going to be tired in the playoffs and they'll still find themselves in the Western Conference final because the division sucks. Mike Cremalla, UNLV basketball, and I guess Tony Sanchez next.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Mike Cremalla from the Las Vegas Sun joins us now. We'll get to basketball, but we have the breaking news that Tony Sanchez will officially be back, according to Desiree Reed-Francois' statement. I'm curious, Mike, if you're reading into this as much as I am, of her saying we're looking forward to a successful 2019 football season, including bowl eligibility, that's the answer. He has to go to a bowl game, and Desiree Reed-Francois is basically saying that now.
Yeah, I mean, she said in the statement, including bowl eligibility, but I assume that means exclusively that is the one and only factor in whether he stays or goes. It's really going to be bowl game or probably, I mean, if they don't make it the day after the season ends in 2019, he's probably gone. So that's exactly what I got from it.
Go get your dog. Bring him over. I'd rather the barking be loud in a whole part of the interview than just in the background.
Okay. All right. I open the door. I'm sitting in my office, and he started barking right before we went on the air, so I closed the door. But he has separation anxiety, so I really can't. He might be good now.
That's okay. Let him in. If he barks, it's all good. It's all good.
So
Tony Sanchez, are you surprised they put out a statement? Like, I didn't think one was really necessary for Tony Sanchez being back.
I think the speculation had reached a point where it was so talked about over the final weeks of the season that you probably had to announce it. I think after it didn't happen, if he wasn't fired in the immediate days after the end of the season, you know, it's been almost a full week now. After the final game, you know, you let 2 days later, you're letting him paint the cannon and you're letting him do the celebration and all that stuff. If you're letting him do that, I think most people assume that you know, you're not going to fire him after that. So most people assumed he was safe. But I do think the speculation had reached a point where, you know, he probably the right move to just come out and announce, yeah, he's coming back.
If I put you in the shoes of Tony Sanchez and you're trying to sell fans to buy tickets, what are you using to convince fans that next year will be different and next year will end in 6 wins in a bowl game?
Once we got Armani Rogers back healthy, he scored 5 touchdowns and helped us beat our biggest rival. And we think he's going to do that all season next year. Clear sailing superstar quarterback. If I'm Tony Sanchez, that's what I'm selling.
All right. I don't know if it'll work very well. I think we're going to have some bad attendance next year, but we'll see. If they win some early games, possibly it gets better. All right. Basketball. They lose to Valpo. The turnovers, I assume offensively that that's the floor for UNLV, but now my question is, since we've seen it twice already, how often do you think they hit that floor on offense?
Well, there's so many things that went into that performance that, you know, it's like you said, it's the floor. And we know they have the potential to be a really bad offensive team, and you never really know when it's going to hit, and it hit last night. It's just the offense that they run. It's what strikes me is they run the offense as though Brandon McCoy is still there. It's like Justin. We thought Justin would be the guy, and they would run it through him now, but they really don't. They post up their center, whether it's Jiang or even Dembele or whoever's in the game. That's the guy that they run the offense through, and that's the guy they're looking to force the ball into. And those guys aren't giving you McCoy production every night. I mean, Jiang is making some big steps, but you know, he's not McCoy on offense, and it dunks everything up when it's not working. And you know that they don't have, you know, natural passers on the team. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, true penetrators. There's not a lot of guys that see the floor well or that can, you know, create on their own. So they're relying on the system, but they're not a super skilled team. There's a lot of things that went wrong. And I think if you're a UNLV fan, the scary thing is I didn't even think Valparaiso really pressured the ball that much. And Menzies brought it up in his press conference. He said Valpo doesn't play a defense that forces a lot of turnovers. That's not their style. I think UNLV just gave it away, just kicking the ball away. And we've seen that twice now in, 6 games? If they keep playing at that pace, it's going to be a long season. Because we've seen 1 game with good shooting, and we've seen 2 games with, you know, a combined 50 turnovers. So, I mean, if you keep that up, they may have to put out a statement about Menzies after the season, because I mean he's in, you know, year 3, and they don't have guys that can play offense, it looks like. So it might be a long season if this is the floor and if they keep going back there.
On this offensive side, and it kind of ties in with you saying they run the offense through the center regardless of who it is. When you have a game, and they'll see this again, where Valpo tries to clamp down on the post and they try to force those big men to pass it out of double teams and out of just a crowd. I love Amori Hardy, and I think he's the best option in terms of breaking down the defense, but he wasn't good last night. What's next for them? Like, what should they turn to if teams take away the post and Hardy has a bad game? Because I look at the team and the skill set, and it's like, I don't know what the next option should be.
The coaches should turn to Shakur Justin in the locker room and say, Shakur, score the ball. Like, take the ball and score. There were times last night he was driving into the paint and he's under the rim, and instead of shooting the ball, he's throwing wraparound passes to Shekna Dembele, who, as we've seen over the past couple of years, has 0% chance of catching that ball. And they turn into turnovers and they're going the other way for transition. Shakur Justin has to, I know he doesn't want to, but he has to assume a bigger role on this offense and be more assertive. And he kind of alluded to it himself after the game in his press conference, so I wonder if the coaches even mentioned it to him in the post game before they came out to talk to the media. Shakur said, you know, we're under the basket a lot, and sometimes we're too unselfish, and we need to just shoot the ball when we're in position to shoot it. And I think that is probably something the coaches are going to bring up to him in the near future, because if you give me a choice between Shakur Justin under the basket with the ball already in his hands or Shekna Dembele having to catch a pass in traffic and then go up and finish, I want Shakur Justin to shoot it. Like, he needs to shoot more. He's one of the few guys they have on offense that is capable of scoring against good defenses and making good offensive plays and making shots. So I want him to take more. I think that's who you turn to if things aren't going well.
1 for 6 for Noah Robotham from three. He's at 23% from three-point range this year. At what point do you start to worry that he's not going to be a good shooter at all this season?
I'm still not worried. I'm still hanging my hat on his career numbers. He is too. I asked him about it before the Valparaiso game, and he said, you know, I was looking at my shot selection. You know, I think there's some shots I can eliminate, some shots that I was forced to take, but, you know, everything's still good. He said, you know, his track record, he's got a long track record. He's, you know, around 40% for his career. He thinks at the end of the season his numbers are going to be what his numbers usually are, and I tend to agree with him. I mean, three-point shooting is something that should translate from, you know, the jump from Akron to UNLV in the Mountain West is not that great. That three-point shooting shouldn't translate. It is a slump, and it hurts the team a lot when he's not making threes, but they need him to keep taking them. That's the thing. So the same way they needed Jovan Mooring to keep taking them last year. There aren't a lot of three-point shooters on the team. Robotham is one of the few guys who's on the opposing scouting reports where opposing teams say, hey, we need to get out on this shooter. So he's the one guy that's in the starting lineup that is spacing the floor. He has to keep shooting, even if he's 1 of 6, 2 of 7. He's got to keep shooting until he gets hot, until those numbers regress to the mean, which I assume they will over the course of the season. He's got to keep shooting.
Mike Grimala is wonderful in that he tracks the 5-on-5 plus-minus of different lineups that UNLV uses. And I'm curious. I don't know that you woke up early to get the plus minuses down for this last game, but has anything jumped out to you through the first 5 or 6 games as far as who's good and who's not good in terms of plus minus?
I haven't added this most recent game. I know that the starting lineup is struggling. They struggle to open games. You know, those first 4 or 5 minutes, they're always down. They're minus 16 for the season coming into last night. And I think that's probably directly related to the struggles on offense to start games. You know, it's Jiang, Hardy are their standouts, plus-minus-wise, when those guys are on the floor together. That's when UNLV seems to play its best. And Shakur Jusin in there as well. So that's like your top three performers so far in terms of just raw score. But, you know, Hardy is a guy who we thought, you know, he had a bad opening night, and we thought he was kind of making the sophomore leap, and he played 4 really good games in a row. And then a big step backwards last night. So I know a lot of people are clamoring. You know, you want Hardy in the starting lineup. You think he's the best point guard on the roster. I am a little more conservative. I like him in this role, you know, 20 minutes a game. I'd like to see him excel in that role for a little while longer before I hand him the keys because, you know, as we saw last night, things can still go wrong. I want to see him really win that role and force the team to play him in that spot and play him more minutes because I think he's the one guy that does have good upside on this team, where if he plays well, he can elevate the entire offensive performance. So I do want to see more from Hardy. I want to see him do it consistently every night. And then hopefully at some point he shows you that he's capable of playing 30 minutes and playing those starters minutes and playing with Gian and Juicin for the entire game. I think that's one thing that could really help the team. If Hardy reaches his ceiling at some point this year and plays consistently, that's the one thing that could maybe dig them out of this offensive hole.
Mick Cronin comes on Saturday. How much booing will there be?
Well, if UNLV won this game against Valparaiso in a, you know, 5-game winning streak, people kind of excited about the team. I could have seen, you know, 10, 11, 12,000 people in that arena. But with the loss, I mean, we know how the fans react to losses for UNLV basketball. It's going to be muted. It's going to be dead. Maybe 7, 8,000 people. I mean, maybe more. It's a Saturday afternoon. Cincinnati's kind of a name opponent. But it's not going to be the passionate, like, booing. Just the passion isn't there for the program right now. It's not going to be a frenzied people looking for their pound of flesh from Mick Cronin. It was you know, almost 4 years ago now. A lot has happened since then. The fans have dispersed for the large part. There's not a lot of, I don't know. It's just I don't expect much. There will be booing. He's going to get booed, of course. It's just not going to be a memorable. You know, the rafters are not going to shake with the fans' anger towards Mick Cronin.
I'll be disappointed because that's what I want. I want as much anger towards Mick Cronin as possible.
I mean, Chris Beard, you put Chris Beard in the building, And maybe you get that kind of reaction.
Yep, I want the home-and-home with Texas Tech. Let's get it done. All right, last one for you. Were you surprised? Because I got some of it, too, and I scrolled through your mentions on Twitter and saw similar thoughts. Are you surprised that there's a multitude of fans on Twitter that want Marvin Menzies fired right now?
No, because that's any time that happens, a game like that where it's, you lose to a bad team and you look bad doing it, those games, you know, there's a lot of turnovers and offensive fouls and you're missing every shot. When that happens, it just seems like there's no end in sight. And it is Menzies' third year. The team probably should be further along by now. Rick Pitino is out there. You know, he's just he strikes me as the exact kind of guy that you and Elite fans like would want. Like, there aren't many programs in the country or fan bases that would like welcome Rick Pitino, but I think UNLV is one of them, and he's just kind of looming out there. And you know he'd have the team, you know, 25 wins in the NCAA tournament, you know, within 1 year.
Wins vacated within five?
Yeah, but I think UNLV is the one fan base. It's one of the few fan bases that are fine with that. Like, let's just win. We'll deal with the NCAA later. I think that's, like, one thing that would work. But in Menzies, on the other hand, you know, Rick Pitino or someone like that would do a quick fix, and the fans always want that. Menzies is over here trying to sell long-term. We're building it. We're going to be good 3 years from now, 4 years from now. And once we get it, the tracks laid down, it's going to be smooth sailing. Mixed metaphor. But, you know, once we get it going, it's going to be good. And the fans are, in the 3 years in, the fans are, you know, saying, well, when are you going to get it going? Because we're watching you lose to Valpo, and we're watching you be, the team is completely inept on offense, and we don't have players yet. So I can understand where the frustration is coming from the fans. I don't think Menzies is on the hot seat yet. I don't think that's, you know, imminent. I don't think anything is going to happen with him. But I do understand why the fans are, you know, it's Twitter. I understand where the fans are coming from.
I enjoy your live self-editing of your messed up metaphor. He's Mike Grimaldo of the Las Vegas Sun. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
We haven't even talked about Jake Bischoff yet. He scored a goal. That's all we're doing next segment. Yesterday we had Jake Bischoff on the show. Today we talked to the new coach of a 15th-place USL team. Are we hooking the brand of the show up to the wrong thing?
No.
Are the right things?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we sure?
I'm 100% positive that this is our lane.
This is our path to stardom.
Well, I don't know about stardom, but this is our path.
All right.
This is, no one else is going to this well.
Okay.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Jake Bischoff scored his first goal of the season for the Chicago Wolves last night. Best goal of the AHL season, obviously. George McPhee shouldn't need any more reason to call him up. But in case he does, Jake Bischoff still has as many goals in the NHL as Derek Englund, John Merrill, Braden McNabb, and Nate Schmidt combined.
Nice.
We don't have Jesus Lopez calling this goal, but we do have the call from AHL.TV, thanks to the Chicago Wolves.
Of a check and finds McKenzie on in front. A block by Hronek. Yeah. A shot by Bischoff. He scores. A bounce goes the Wolves' way after the Griffins blocked it by Hronek right to Bischoff. And the Wolves within one.
Yeah, lots of time too. And just a matter of time for this to finally develop for the Wolves. And you sometimes need a break to go your way. And that opens up the area for Jake Bischoff.
Okay. It was four non-blondes. What's going on playing at a hockey arena?
Probably.
Am I the only one that finds that to be a weird hockey song?
No, why? It's probably they were on the road, I think. So it was probably the other team scored. This is the song we're playing.
Okay, I guess that makes a little bit of sense.
Is this what it feels like for parents to relive their athletic dreams through their kids?
Aren't you guys like the same age?
Yeah, I think I'm like 2 years older than him.
Okay.
But this is what it feels like, right?
I assume so. I don't know. I'm not a parent. I'm 2 years older than you, so I'm 4 years older than him.
The Chicago Wolves bring us great joy with Jake Bischoff and great pain with their mascot.
Oh, my God.
Skates, the Wolf mascot, is...
my favorite thing to text message you.
A nightmare. Oh, my God. Like, his eyes and nose aren't straight or something.
I know.
Like, there's... there's something, like, it's not just me being afraid of mascots. There's something, like, physically wrong with the mask. They messed it up.
They said they went out of their way to make him the most frightening mascot.
He looks like he got hit by a shovel.
Yeah. Like, but he's still terrified. Like, the shovel didn't take.
Yeah, yeah, it just messed him up a little bit, but he's...
he's still coming.
Like, he's probably worse than the Aces mascot Buckets now. Like, what is going on here? That thing is terrifying. Like, it's not worse than Lil Rep, because that's just an inflatable monster.
Yo, suck it,
Tyler!